This is the Bates Bobcast, our weekly podcast about the week that was in Bates Athletics. My name is Aaron Morse, and this week we're celebrating women's rowing winning their eighth NASCAC title. Plus, men's rowing is also headed to nationals after a strong performance on Sunday, and we look back on men's lacrosse's third appearance in the NCAA Sweet 16. That's coming up on the Bates Bobcast. The Bates rowing teams traveled to Worcester and competed in Sunday's National Invitational Rowing Championship. On the women's side, the first and second varsity eights combined to win the program's eighth NASCAC championship and their first since 2022, as the first varsity eight took home the gold medal in their grand final, beating runner-up Williams by more than 2 seconds. Sophomore coxswain Leah Brody led the 1V to victory, and she is our female Bobcat of the Week. Here with women's first varsity eight coxswain, Leah Brody, talking some rowing here on the Bobcast. NASCAC champs for the eighth time, but for the first time for anyone on the current roster. And so, Leah, I mean, take us through NIRCs, take us through specifically the 1V grand final. I hear it was quite the comeback.
Yes, so this was a very exciting weekend for us. We came into this weekend ranked second in D3 rowing, so we were right behind Williams. We had Tufts and Trinity nearby. And in our morning heat, it was us against Smith, Williams, Smith, Hamilton, Rochester, and Mount Holyoke. So we knew Williams, Smith, and Smith were fast. We kind of came into that preparing to just go fast, get into the final in the afternoon. We wanted a good lane placement as well. So getting first was pretty important for us. We knew the winds would be picking up, and on the Quinsigamond, it's pretty different across the lanes, how much the wind is going to affect you. So that first race, just really focusing in and laying down a good race, was super important for us. And we ended up getting first, which was super exciting. Followed our race plan, felt really confident coming out of that. We were able to get first by a pretty decent margin and also save a little bit of energy by not having to do a full sprint. So that was super important for us coming into the grand final. Interestingly, with these races, you have about 5 hours between the two. So
it's a while.
There is a long recovery period. We're very lucky. We're able to go up to a hotel and sit for a couple hours, get some lunch, and then come back down to the course to watch some more racing. But really an important time for our rowers to reset, you know, get some rest in, get some shade if it's sunny, which it was quite hot on Sunday. So very, very useful. And we came back down expecting a very competitive grand final. D3 rowing is at its fastest right now. It's incredibly competitive. And we came into it just knowing to trust ourselves, be confident, and lay down the best race we could. So before we got on the water, our coach spoke to us. And I think this was super helpful for my boat, which it was just taking a little bit of pressure off. He told us this grand final, this is likely to be NCAAs. These are the fastest boats right now. Go out there, have fun, race a good race, but just take that extra little bit of confidence in with you. And I think that's what really set us up for a lot of success. And then right off the line, you know, we were in fifth, which is pretty typical for Bates rowing. If you listen to the commentary from this race, it's a lot of Bates is back in fifth, but that's nothing new. Just wait for their, quote, devastating base pace, which, you know, was a good feeling for us to hear that about ourselves. And we kind of just did our thing through the race, which is focusing on one boat at a time, walking through them, and creeping our way up. And I think it was around 1,000-meter mark, you know, our bow ball was sitting in third, and I started to realize, wow, we can pull this off. And it was Tufts, and it was Williams, and then it was just Williams, and then it was just us, and we ended up winning by about half a length, which was incredibly exciting. Across the line, a lot of tears, a lot of joy, and yeah, what an amazing experience.
Well, yeah, I saw you raise your arms above your head after you crossed the finish line. I mean, flipping the script on Williams, Williams obviously won the New England's race, and you were able to flip it. What were the similarities, differences between those two races? Because New England's the same course as this.
Yes. So there's a couple differences to me. Mm-hmm. The main ones, obviously, just in terms of placement, is at NERC's, we had MIT and Middlebury in our race as well. And Middlebury was our competition during that race, and we had a nice long fight with them, but still ended up 2.2 seconds behind Williams, if I'm not mistaken. And there was also slightly different winds. So for our race, I always love a headwind. I think our fitness is incredible, and being able to draw that race out really is to our advantage. So being in lane two, which is one of the better lanes for wind, but also knowing how capable we are of rowing through wind, we train on the Skog, which often gets a good amount of wind. And I think we were just very prepared to handle that, which really worked to our advantage.
Great. Well, for you personally, last year you were the coxswain for the second Varsity 8. This year you stepped into the first Varsity 8 boat. What's been that transition been like for you this year as a sophomore leading the top boat?
It's definitely a change. Last year, being in the second Varsity 8 was also a pretty senior heavy boat at this time, which it is again for the first Varsity 8. But I had a stroke seat who was a senior and a captain, and she really helped me through last year. But I think this year, being able to have a bit more of a leadership role has been really exciting. And I'd like to think I've improved quite a bit just this season alone, because you just have to. And learning on the fly a little bit, but also interacting with rowers at different levels and hearing what they like and don't like from their coxswain has been incredibly useful. I always say the more feedback, the better. And even this past weekend, between races, we workshopped a little bit of our race plan, and being able to hear what the rowers want and what they've had experience with, especially in the first Varsity 8, it's a bit more of an experienced crew, has really pushed me to get better. And then at the same time, it's also just a very different attitude. I think in the 2V, you very much develop an underdog mentality. So every practice, you know, you're behind the 1V and you're pushing them to get better. And here you set the standard a little bit for the team, but you also know you're pushing every boat behind you because they want to be right up there with you. And especially with the 2V, in the days leading up to NIRC's, we had a lot of fierce competition that I know made both of us stronger. So that was super exciting.
Yeah, certainly. And then for you personally, growing up, when did you first start getting into this sport? A lot of people come to Bates and they're novices when they start here. Did you have experience growing up as a coxswain? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I was very opposed to joining rowing for a while. My sister is a rower, actually rows, doesn't cox. And she started freshman year of high school. She's 4 years older than me. And she and also my mother had been trying to convince me to join for quite some time, often saying I wasn't hardy enough to be a rower, but would make a very good coxswain. I'm a little bossy, so they say. And I finally was convinced with much ado the spring of my junior year. So I started quite late. And I coxed for Greenwich Crew, which is about 30 minutes from where I live. And we had very competitive rivals a little closer to home, but I decided to go where my sister went. And I was thrown into a novice boat day one, not a ton of instruction. And I think something about coxing is the only way to learn it is just by being in a boat. So I feel very grateful to my stroke seat then, who taught me so much, but I do think a lot of my progress and love for rowing came from Bates. I was only on the varsity team for a year in high school. I was in lower boats, which was amazing and very useful. But again, a lot of my progress, especially I think technical knowledge, started at Bates. We have a very different stroke than many other programs, and learning that from the ground up, I think, was very critical to my advancement as a coxswain.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask, when you were looking at colleges, what made Bates the place for you? How did you kind of connect with the school?
I always wanted to go to an ESCAC. Mm-hmm. My brother and dad both went to Williams. So I was very keen on the whole D3 liberal arts experience. And I wanted somewhere I could row. I had already started enjoying it and wanted to cox somewhere. And I also loved Maine. I grew up going to summer camp in Maine. It's obviously a beautiful state. And you really cannot beat the location where we row. The Skog is so beautiful. It's completely ours. There's very rarely other boats on the water, which is very different from where I coxed in high school. It's pretty shallow. There's a lot of speedboats and yachts and traffic. So everything about that appealed to me. Also, and I was always told this by people when I was looking at Bates or told them I was accepted, I've never heard of anyone having a bad experience at Bates. Everyone is just so happy here. And I think that reflects a lot both on the student body as a whole, but also my team is just always so happy to be practicing. The community is so strong, and I can't imagine myself anywhere else.
Yeah, the rowing team obviously is a big roster. There's lots of people on it. How do you kind of get to know everyone? Because people will – I mean, the first varsity has been pretty stable this year in terms of the boat, but people will come in and out of boats. You got to get to know everybody, right?
Yeah. Anyone who knows rowers at Bates College knows the corner where we eat in Commons. It, in my opinion, is the easiest way to get to know people. As a coxswain, we also, like, do attendance. You learn names pretty quickly. But getting to know people is really crucial to coxing. Everyone has very individual thoughts on how they like to be coxed, which really comes to play into play in the winter when we do individual coxing on the erg. People like hearing their names. People like hearing numbers. They like hearing about other teams. They don't. And I think knowing your rowers better is critical to being a good coxswain. And with a big roster, it just is important to be able to sit down and share a meal with people. And it gets pretty easy to get to know people, especially in the spring, I think, is when relationships develop the most. We just spend a lot of time together between the hotel and the bus rides and just being at the boathouse a lot. It's hard to not become close with everyone.
Great. Last year, you got to experience the NCAA championships as a first year. Going back now this season, what did you learn from your first NCAAs you're going to apply this year?
Yeah, so last year was at Mercer, which was very familiar to me. It's a little bit closer to home, and I raced there a lot in high school. And this year we're going to Georgia, where I've never been to Gainesville. I've never been to this course. It looks wonderful, but I think going into this new place with the experience of what NCAAs is like and kind of the heightened excitement and also nerves surrounding it is going to be really crucial to maintaining a calm, stable role in a boat. The coxswain is always meant to be the rock. You don't share your nerves. You don't share your excitement. We're always meant to be the most boring person in the boat, which, I mean, I think everyone can tell I'm very excited, but definitely having a little bit of experience under my belt on what it's like to race and the whole system surrounding it. And then I think it's also pretty similar to these past 2 weekends of racing where you get to go six across. And to me, that's always the most exciting thing about it all, is this is the fastest D3 rowing is, and then these are the fastest boats, and we get to compete against them again. And it's likely that it's going to be the same people we've raced against for the past couple weeks, which you just know that they're looking for something, and we just have to keep doing what we're doing.
Yeah, because I mean, I feel like last year Bates was trying to catch a few boats, and now they're trying to catch you. What's that dynamic like being, I mean, quote unquote, I guess the favorite coming off the NESCAC title, right?
Yes, the new rankings actually just dropped. Yeah. We're ranked number one, which is very exciting. It's definitely a different mindset shift. This day last year was the selection show, which was the most stressful day of my life, maybe. But, I mean, for anyone who has seen that video, there is an unfortunate clip of me crying in it. Zoomed in on my face.
That was me. I'm sorry.
So having that confidence and not having to react to whether or not we're getting in is really a good feeling. That level of calm you can definitely feel in the boathouse. Both teams are confirmed to be going to their national championship, which is incredible. And having the first place from this past weekend and being ranked number one definitely does put a target on your back. We also have a race plan that it seems most people seem to understand at this point, either from the commentary or just talking to other coxswains after the race. They know what we're doing, which can be good and bad. And at the same time, I also think, you know, hopefully it makes them a little bit scared of what we're going to do to them on the course. For me, I think the confidence is crucial to this team. knowing what you're capable of doing to other boats and knowing that you've done it once before can have a really positive impact on how a crew performs on race day. And then also continuing to really keep our head down and put in the work for these next couple of weeks. We call it Champ Camp. And, you know, it's a lot of work that we have ahead of us. And continuing to gain speed, continuing to work hard, and make ourselves the fastest boat that we can be. Because nothing's official after last weekend. And conditions change and lanes change and anything can happen in rowing. So working hard, getting it done, and also carrying a little bit of confidence, I think will be really important with this first place ranking.
Yeah, you mentioned the course it's unfamiliar to all of us. Bates says I don't think I've ever been to this course down there, at least not in recent history. What do you know about it? What have you looked up about it so far?
Yeah, I mean, it looks beautiful. Yeah. I've looked it up. It used to be an Olympic site. Mm-hmm. So it's a gorgeous course. I know Colby trains down there sometimes for their spring training trip. Mm. So I've heard good things. That being said, don't know much. I think a lot of it is, you know, Georgia's hotter than Maine. Mm. So getting ready for humidity, for heat, is something we've been talking about a little bit, just as a boat. And then also just knowing, like, we're going to be flying down there. Last year we got to take a bus down to New Jersey. It kind of feels like a little bit of a different ballgame. It just feels a little bit more serious to be able to take that step. But at the same time, most of the other teams competing in D3 NCAAs are also from the Northeast. So I think a lot of us are coming at it with a similar perspective. I presume that most teams who are racing there with us have also not been down there.
Excellent. Well, I guess any other thoughts you wanted to share on NIRCs or the season so far we haven't got to talk about? I was actually curious, the NESCAC title, they've changed the rules recently where it's actually points, not just the 1V. Did you know you'd won the NESCAC after you crossed the finish line, or did you have to kind of wait to figure that out?
So going into it, I actually had just found out about the rule change. Our coach had texted us a little screenshot of the points breakdown, and we knew where our 2V had placed. And I think a lot of people didn't realize that it would be even if Tufts had gotten third and we got first. Mm. And then we got off the water and they were like, oh, we're also NESCAC champions, which perhaps I had just kind of been hopeful that we would be. But the tiebreaker being whoever wins the varsity eight, and we were both tied at 50.
Yeah,
I mean, good work on the 2V's behalf, because I think it would have been a very different – Not very different per se, but it makes it all the sweeter that we got the NESCAC champion and we got to bring that banner home and that trophy. And I think it just means a lot to this team, especially, you know, last year we went to NCAAs after not going the year prior, and we always say Bates is back, and it really feels true this time.
Yeah, certainly. Ranked number one in the country after winning the program's eighth NESCAC title in women's rowing. Leah Brody, first varsity eight coxswain, our female Bobcat of the week. Thank you so much for joining us on the Bobcast. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
On the men's side, the Bobcats earned an at-large bid to the IRA National Championship Regatta as the Bates first varsity eight took fifth in their grand final at NIRCs. Junior coxswain Darian Chang led the Bobcats down the course, and he is our male Bobcat of the week. Well, Darian, welcome back to the Bobcast, our male Bobcat of the week, the first varsity eight getting fifth at NIRCs on Sunday. And we found out today, at-large bid to IRA. So first of all, Darian, how excited is the team to once again race and go to California for this fun, right?
Yeah, it's very exciting. We haven't been to California for IRAs since I've been here, at least. The past weekend was huge. You know, beating Colby was a great confidence booster for the guys, and we're just excited to have more time on the water and keep training because, you know, we just love being together.
Yeah, speaking of Colby, obviously, Colby won the men's races at the President's Cup, and then you all were able to flip it this past weekend. So what was the key to beating them? I imagine that was probably a big goal going in, right?
Yeah, definitely. I would say we've been talking about this word trust, but like kind of giving in to each other at the start of races and, you know, kind of shutting off the mind and allowing yourself to kind of go into that place, like kind of for the guys, at least, like keeping their hand close to the fire and really committing to the start of the race and just like overall trusting each other that the rhythm will be there and the water will be there, and, you know, we're going to execute it as we planned.
Yeah, so take us through the race and kind of how it went from your perspective in the grand final.
Yeah, I mean, we got off the line really well. I would say we were level with Williams and Tufts, and that was kind of exactly where we wanted to be. We were maybe even expecting to be down a little bit, but you know, we found ourselves in this spot where we were a couple seats up on Colby and level with all the other crews. And, you know, that's a spot we haven't been in before. So I think some of the guys were, you know, a little bit nervous or excited even. But like we executed our race really well to the 1,000 meter mark, and we got hit by some really strong gusts at that point. I think lane advantages might have had some play in it, but after we kind of got hit by those gusts, it was a little bit hard to recover, but I think we still executed a good race.
You've been to IRAs a couple times already, obviously. Tell me how this regatta maybe is similar or different than other ones, because similar opponents, but it feels maybe a little bit bigger, right?
Yeah, I mean, for me at least, this is my last season here, so it's kind of sad for me, this being my last trip to IRAs with Bates. And also, just being in California, I think that'll be different than opposed to we're in
New Jersey.
New Jersey, yeah, New Jersey. I should know that. But making the trip across will be really fun.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you mentioned it's your last year. You're a junior, but you're doing the 3-2 plan, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so tell us, have you decided on a school?
Yeah, so I'll be going to Columbia next year.
What are you most looking forward to about that opportunity, kind of going to Columbia? What are you kind of looking for? You know, have you thought about, like, what you're most excited about, sort of?
It's just a very different space. I think, you know, Bates is very small. Yeah. So you get a very personal relationship with all of your professors and your friends, and you kind of know everyone. Going to a place like Columbia is just a lot larger, and it's in the city as well. So
right. Yeah. A little bit different experience.
Very different experience. Yeah. So I don't know. I think I'm excited for the change of environment and kind of seeing how that is, because I think I've been in a very kind of, I wouldn't say secluded, but like kind of out of the way environment since like high school.
Right, right. And then, so you mentioned this being your last regatta coming up there in California. Tell me a little bit about the 1V boat, the relationship you developed with those guys. Maybe in particular, your stroke sheet, Luke, because I'm sure you work closely with him, right?
Yeah, I mean, we've had a lot of time to kind of chat and kind of be in each other's spaces. So I would say that we know each other very well, and we know like how we're going to behave. And I would even say like sometimes guys can kind of predict what I'm going to say like on the water. So I think just spending a lot of time with each other, you kind of understand like how you work and how they work and what gets them going.
Tell me a little bit about maybe some of the conversations you've had with Coach Steenstra about, you know, this year's team. Coach mentioned that you and him talk frequently about race conditions, stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, I love Coach. He's a great guy. But we chat a lot about kind of just like race day, like race plan, like where we expect to be, how to handle certain race conditions, how to handle just where we are in the race. I think for expectations this year, like we believe that, you know, we have a very fast crew. It's a younger boat, and we got on the water a little bit later as it compared to a lot of the other teams. So we're just, this extra 3 weeks will be huge for us, as that kind of lets us, you know, catch up and really kind of develop our rowing ability on the water and just that confidence, as this is a younger boat in terms of varsity.
Gotcha. And then, yeah, I mean, you mentioned these extra few weeks. What's it like, you know, during short term having this time? I mean, I know you're very busy today, you mentioned, but in terms of the time to be able to train and maybe in a more relaxed environment, perhaps? Or is it more intense even, perhaps?
I would say for rowing, it's even more intense but academically, I would say it's a lot easier.
Right.
Since we do have this short term, we can do two sessions a day on the water pretty easily without a lot of time constraints and working around a lot of people's schedules. So I think it just really allows us to focus on rowing, and that's a huge advantage that we have.
Yeah, definitely. Well, any other thoughts you wanted to share on NIRCs? Anything else you wanted to mention we haven't got to talk about?
The guys are just really happy with how we did. It was great for us, and you know, we're really excited to stay on the water, keep building speed, and we look forward to IRAs.
I think Coach told you guys you were in last night at
the Blade Ceremony.
The Blade Ceremony, yeah. Tell me a little about the Blade Ceremony.
Yeah, so it's just this kind of event that we have where people who are graduating get to say a little bit about their time and experience on the Bates rowing team. So me and Lando, who are part of the 3-2 program, were also speaking then. So that was exciting. And then Blade Ceremony, of course, Coach gives you a blade for completing your time at Bates. So that's also really cool.
Nice. What was your main message when you spoke?
I think just really trusting what Coach Steenstra is planning. He doesn't vocalize his ideas very often, but he always has a plan in the background. And, you know, he does some dark arts magic to make boats go fast. And not a lot of people understand what's really happening, but you just got to like buy in and really trust what he's doing.
Excellent. Darian Chang, our male Bobcat of the week. The Bobcats are headed to the IRA National Championship Regatta again. It'll be May 29th and May 30th for the D3 races. And looking forward to those out in California. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Head coach Peter Steenstra gives us an overview of how the teams performed this past Sunday. Well, coach, it was quite the win for the women's rowing team there on Sunday for the first varsity eight. Fifth place through 500 meters, maybe third place halfway through. Get the win. That's the plan, though, right? That's the Bates rowing plan. Tell me how they executed it there on Sunday.
Is it just Bates rowing or is it Bates? I mean, wasn't basketball down 18 points?
Right.
So something tells me
Bates college plan.
There might be something about that. It works out. You know what I'm saying? No. To say that it's our plan, let's just say that we've trained for it. We know that our base race pace speed, which we can do for 3,000 meters, not just 2,000. That's something that is pretty much untouchable. And I think that when you watch the racing, if you see the video, you'll notice that that's exactly what it's like. Everyone beats us off the line, which is great for them. But we can go through the middle of the course, and we're going to do that part faster than you will. And maybe you can put together some sort of a great magical sprint at the end. But here's the difference. Which is harder to add over the next 3 weeks? A body pace that is completely destructive or a start and a sprint? Like those things are easier to add at this point of the year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our competition is not going to get more fit. We're not going to get more fit or stronger, but we will get more accurate with our rowing. We'll get more precise. And if it's just a matter of taking a crew that's already quite good and quite strong and helping them to learn how to row at a 40 or 42 strokes per minute as opposed to a 36 or a 38, that's the problem that I would rather have, is that right there. Because even if you go back and listen to that race again, you'll listen to the commentators. And he pointed out that off the line, Williams was at a 44, I think, and Bates was at a 39. And he referred to Bates as, boy, that's really high for them, as in a very high stroke rating. And he's right, because we generally are not off the line at anything above a 38.
Mm.
But that's the thing that I think we can add over the next couple of weeks, that others would have trouble doing anything about what happens from 250 in to the 250 to go. So that 1,500 meters in the middle, that's where you better buckle up, because it's going to be tough to get in front of us.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that the next couple of weeks before NCAAs for the women, this group, not Bates women's rowing historically, but this group, they're going into NCAAs in kind of an unfamiliar position. The favorites after winning the NESCAC, right? Ranked number one in the country now. From a mentality standpoint, how does that change things as a coach? Because this group has been to NCAAs before. They went last year. They weren't the favorites, though. So now they are. What does that change anything for you from your perspective?
No. We've already dealt with that. You know, we met this morning at practice, and mm-hmm. I just kind of brought it up. I said, does that change a thing? And of course it doesn't. They all just kind of look at me smiling. they're a smart bunch. They know what they're doing. And maybe they haven't gone into this regatta as the favorite before, but I can tell you right now that we went onto that starting line this past weekend, and in our own minds and in our own hearts, we were the favorite. Just because they know what to expect and they know what they can do. They know exactly who they are. The only difference now is that everybody else knows.
Right.
So, no, our approach won't, nothing about what we're doing is changing. And I think that these nine women that are in that boat, not to mention the 21 that will end up being on the trip, they're very secure in who they are and they're very confident in what they're doing. And I don't think it's going to affect them at all being the so-called favorite going into this race.
Tell me a little bit about your sophomore coxswain, our female Bobcat of the week, Leah Brody, and her leadership to step into the 1V this year and help lead to gold medal there in IRCs.
No leader is any better than those who choose to follow them, mm-hmm. right? So I think that what she has is a great crew that has worked through its own things that are personalities. I don't want to use the word conflict, but their personalities are just different.
Mm.
And they've figured each other out. We set this lineup quite a while ago. And Leah is the one who's smart enough to sort of sit back and observe this group of women and how they interact and what the growth that they've had as a group. And now she's learning, where are those little pinpoints? Where can I push this button with this person? What big buzzer do I hit that'll sort of spark all eight of them? And I think that she's a pretty smart person who really has started to figure it out, and mostly done so by watching and listening and being a part of that crew.
I had forgotten that the NESCAC had changed the rules, I think last year, for who wins the NESCAC title. It's no longer just the 1v result for the women. Mm-hmm. It's points to mirror what NCAA does. Did you know right away, were you doing the math in your head when they got first and Tufts was third, that you'd won the NESCAC, or how did that kind of go?
No, it was very reminiscent of the 2015 first time we got a national championship.
Right.
When I'm standing there looking at our former athletic director, Kevin McHugh, and I'm looking at my assistant coaches at the time, and I'm like, look, get the math right.
Right.
I don't want to celebrate this thing until we have the math right. So, of course, I had, Greta's there and Fitz is there, where everyone's looking at their phones and, like, double-checking math. And I think the quote that is Greta looking at Fitz and Fitz looking at Greta, and they're both like, I got 50. Are those the same? As though they both said 50 for points, and then they're like, did we just say the same number? Like, they wanted to make sure they had it right because they knew that the tie would be broken by the varsity eight.
Right. Yeah, certainly. Yeah. I mean, second varsity eight got fourth in their grand final. A lot of depth in women's rowing, obviously, D3. It's faster than ever, I think. What are your thoughts on their race and what their next steps are?
Well, they improved. We know that boat got better. We had to do quite a bit of rigging changes and moving people around the boats. A lot of times you can just have the right eight people. It's just a combination that can really make the difference. And we know that, for instance, Tufts' second varsity eight is quite fast.
Yeah.
So clearly that boat or Trinity's boat or Williams' second boat, they have maybe some bodies down there that they're going to pull into the 1V to see if they can't make improvements in their 1V. And I say, and not necessarily that we're not going to change anything. I just know that we don't need to. I know that our boats are both going to continue to get better.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, our JV8 is the one that has a very steep learning curve still.
Oh.
Still improving significantly every single day. It's still a young boat, and it's still a boat that brings with it a lot of experience at various other schools or some pure walk-on novices. So that boat is just getting better every single time they're on the race course.
Certainly. And then, I mean, on the men's side, being officially announced here on Tuesday that the men are qualifying for IRAs, beat the rival Colby in the 1V race in the grand final. That was, I'm sure, a goal going in because after what happened to the President's Cup, what are your thoughts on what the men were able to do?
What we did that weekend was we had that very simple, very easy, clear target of for the 1V and the 2V. Both of you need to get ahead of Colby. That's step one. It's a good program. They're coached well, and they've had the best of us for the past few weeks. So if we can make that change, if we can flip that switch, then we know that we're in a very, very good place. I knew for sure that top four were an automatic to the IRA, and I could easily assume that the fifth would be. But it turns out that all six are going.
Oh, Colby's going too?
Yeah.
Okay.
So from the grand final of that race, we're going to share some trailers and everyone's going to be out in California, and we're going to hit reset. But the only addition is like Ithaca and Marietta.
Familiar opponents coming up in California for them. So
yeah.
What's been the men's team's journey kind of this year? Because last year they were, top three basically in the country, and this year they're kind of battling to get back there, right?
Yeah. The big gain of this year has been extremely good leadership in Luke DeMaison, his fellow captains, so Micah Shimizu and McKegger there, they've done a really good job just leading the whole operation. And then Darian Chang, who's our coxswain, is, I think he's kind of above our level as far as coxswains go. I think he's better than perhaps any other Division III coxswain on either side of the boathouse. He is a strategist. He has a great understanding of not just the sport, but how a boat moves in the water. And he really is like having a whole nother coach in the boat, because he can do things with the guys that most coxswains that are just come up through the lower ranks wouldn't know how to do. So on top of that, he and I have had a lot of really good conversations. So I feel very confident when I speak with him and we talk about the race coming up, or even in between races. He and I could stand down there by the finish line area. We're looking at the water, checking the wind, looking at this flag. What's the sky going to do? You know, a lot of things like that that really go a long way, because he's reading the water as he's going. You know, every 20 meters, he's reading what's coming up, and he's sensing what his guys are doing. And simultaneously, he's keeping an eye on the competition on both sides. So I think he just really has a very natural way about him. So I say all that to try to answer your question in the longest form I possibly can. Because the other end of this is we have 5/8 deep.
Yep.
And so that result at the NIRC was 5 men's eights from Bates in the grand finals.
Yep.
Which this is the first time we've ever had that. So to have that kind of depth where we have a 4/8 and a 5/8 in the same race trying to beat each other up a little bit. You know, got some pure walk-ons, and we got some guys that are disappointed to be in one boat and guys that are really psyched to be in the same boat, and then somehow together coming together and doing some racing. So my hat's off to Fitz, for Coach Fitz. Done such a good job just sparking energy deep into this well that is Batesman rowing. It's pretty exciting.
So that really bodes well for building this program the next couple of years, right, in terms of these guys hopefully showing those improvements, getting into the 1V, basically?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And what she's doing is, instead of preparing, say, a third eight to be coached by the varsity head coach with the V16, she's preparing 3/8 worth of guys who are going to understand what it is to be in the V16. And it may take 2 or 3 years to get there, but the point is you're getting the background, you're getting the information, and you're getting the racing experience that leads you or prepares you for something like the V16.
So with all that depth, who are we sending to IRAs in terms of, I know we've raced fours there before. What are we doing?
So we are taking 2/8.
Yep.
And then we take a 4 as well.
1/4, okay.
So the 2/8 is just like the women's system. But since we can take 2/8 and then a spare pair, like two extra people on the women's side, for the men, we're taking 4 spares as well as that spare coxswain, because at least then they can race.
Mm-hmm.
But to take just 2 people, which is what the women's system does, there's no race for them.
Right.
We're not even allowed to put a pair on the water for them to practice, if you can believe it. So, they're on the trip and they're a part of it and they're ready to hop in when they need to. But unfortunately for the spare women, they're not going to get a chance to get on the water. Whereas these men, it's just a matter of 2 more guys.
Yeah.
And what's 2 more guys in the scheme of this kind of a trip, right? So we take them. They are 4 spares that we have with a spare coxswain, and they actually get to do a race, which is a very exciting time. They'll race more than the other boats.
Right.
Because they have a time trial, they have a heat, they have a rep, and then they have a final. So they'll race 4 times.
Yeah. We're an eights program, obviously, but with those fours, how do you kind of utilize them to help with training? And, you know, we've entered fours in many races this year, obviously.
To be in a four is kind of takes a slightly different, I don't want to say skill set, but you have to be more similar in the four. So, for instance, you can have one guy who's not quite as tall as the others in an eight, or one guy who is too tall as compared to the others.
Right.
But in a four, it's really difficult. If you represent 25% of that boat's output, and if you are wildly different in any way, it's really going to offset things. So a lot of times a four, the lineup comes from the similarities and then what is simply a good combination, in addition to being who's strong and who's not as strong. So we primarily use them as just a training tool. It's a developmental tool. We don't spend a lot of time in the fours for our general training purposes, just because we have 5/8 worth of people and only myself and Fitz, and even I'm only there half the time.
Yeah.
But I will say one thing is that we've had Wiley Anderson, who's a senior, and he's been injured for the whole year. So he knew very early on, back in the winter, that he was not going to be able to race. And I said, well, look, you know, it helps us out if you want to be on the river in a launch and just be a safety boat. And that allows us to put out more small boats, like pairs and doubles, singles, just for those extra bodies that we tend to have a lot of. And he has been invaluable. It's been huge having him around. I for the first reason is because I just know people are safe. That's number one.
Yeah.
But it turns out that he's got some coaching experience. He also knows a little bit himself. He obviously rode here, and then he's gotten better. And once you start working with your teammates, he can point out some small things. He can take a little bit of video and then sit there with them even out on the water and say, hey, look what you're doing. Or he can just say, guys, you know, you're not going as hard as you should be as a fellow rower and a classmate. He can say that. So having him around has been great. We really appreciate it.
Excellent. And then for going back to the women's side a little bit, going to Georgia, it's about Gainesville, Georgia is about an hour, I saw, northeast of Atlanta. It's where they held the Olympics rowing events, I guess, back in 96.
Yeah, I think it's south of Boston somewhere.
Well, a little bit south of Boston.
I think it's like, yeah, it's way down there. New Jersey? It's beyond New Jersey, right?
Yeah, it's a little
really,
bit.
Really far
I believe
away.
We're taking a plane. Well, not you. You're driving the boats. But, I mean, you told me off air you've been to this course a long time ago. But what do you remember about it? Like, I mean, and what do you know about it kind of going in, like, for the women? I mean, I know they had a headwind there, which they liked at Worcester. What do you think it's going to be like down there in Georgia?
Down there, we have the concerns for thunderstorms is kind of the thing that happens down there.
Right.
So you get storm cells that will come through.
Yeah.
Because it's the south.
Yeah,
but the prevailing winds are never generally a problem. It's pretty well protected. It is part of this massive, massive man-made lake down there. So there's no real boating things to be concerned about because there's plenty of other water to keep them occupied. It's a nice course. It's a fair course, which is important. For a while, it was too shallow.
Mm.
This is a few years back, but I guess it's back up. Otherwise, they wouldn't be hosting it there. I don't think it's necessarily susceptible to like a constant head or a constant tail wind or anything. There's no current whatsoever. The only real real complaint I've ever heard from anyone is that it's really far from the hotels.
Okay. Are the hotels like in Atlanta? No.
No. Gainesville. Far. So
yeah.
It's not that far. But
gotcha.
When you're talking about trying to get back and forth for practice to this.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
Or if you have delays in the action and you want to get back to the hotel for an hour, this is one of those places where it's more of like a 40-minute drive to get to the hotels. But I don't know where we are yet. We don't really know how bad it's going
to
be.
Yeah, Leo was saying at Worcester, the hotel is like super close. The team was able to go back between races.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was really tight. It was great.
Yeah. All right. Well, any other thoughts you wanted to share on NIRCs? Anything else you wanted to mention we haven't got to talk about yet?
No, I'm just very pleased with everyone's performance from top to bottom. And you know, we were an overall program that showed a major improvement from the New England Championships, which was 7 days prior, and then go to NIRC and have every single crew improve upon their performance. And that says a lot about the training we did and how we set it up and the planning on our part, but that the athletes all bought into it. And then went into that race with a lot of confidence. So couldn't be happier for everybody. I wish we could take everyone that we have on the roster to these major regattas, but this is the way things go. And they knew that going in, so I think that they are all proud of their teammates and are very happily sending them off, knowing that their job is sort of done as far as how to support and push. And we're looking forward to another good week here of training with everybody, and that will end on next Wednesday. And then we'll have the folks that are done being split off, and then we start traveling. So looking forward to it.
Great. Women's rowing has won the NESCAC for the 8th time in their program history. Both women and men headed to their national regattas coming up at the end of the month. Peter Steenstra, thanks so much.
Thank you.
The softball and men's lacrosse teams both suffered heartbreaking losses over the weekend. The softball team was one out away from beating Middlebury in their NESCAC quarterfinal, but the Panthers forced extra innings and eventually prevailed 3-2 in 8 innings on Friday. Middlebury went on to win the NESCAC championship, and Bates finished their 51st season with an overall record of 17-19. Meanwhile, the men's lacrosse team did win their second round NCAA tournament game, defeating Cortland 17-9 Friday at Garcelon Field. Then on Saturday, Bates fell in the round of 16 to Hope by a score of 14-12, despite leading for most of the contest. After the loss in the Sweet 16, head coach Dan Anino and junior captain Drew McClutchie reflected during the post-game press conference on the game and the season, which saw Bates finish with a record of 12-6.
Yeah, I mean, all credit to Hope. I think they played a great game. They played their style. Just really impressed with that team. They play with a ton of confidence, you know, and they made a few more plays than we did. You know, a couple shots that we would obviously love to have fallen, right? A couple plays that we would have loved to have made. But, you know, that's the difference at this stage. And, you know, just so proud of our guys. And, you know, certainly credit to Hope. They're a heck of a team.
Drew, as a junior captain on this team, I mean, obviously you guys have to be already hungry for next year, right? You have a lot of returners coming back. What are your thoughts initially on what you bring back next year?
Yeah, I mean, we certainly bring back a lot of pieces, you know, but where all that starts is with our senior class. You know, my co-captain, Connor Hartman, our motto this year was all in, and those are guys who committed everything they had to this program. You know, took it from the bottom, you know, and I think today's a place that a lot of people thought we'd never reach. I think those guys giving everything they have, you know, really working to build up this program is why we're able to look on to next year. But just really want to thank those guys and everything they've done.
The conditions today, what was that like playing and have a, you know, consistent rainfall? I know you guys do that a lot, obviously, probably in practice and in other games you've played this year. But, I mean, how much was that impact you see on this game in general for both sides, perhaps?
Yeah, I mean, both teams are playing in the same conditions. So, you know, you know when it's a little bit slick and a little bit wet, then, you know, you got to be, you know, that much more intentional about making sure that you're connecting passes and things like that. And, you know, that's also, you know, part of what it takes to play in May. You're going to be playing in all the different conditions. And, you know, I think both teams had their ups and downs with it throughout the night.
Drew, you touched on this, but, I mean, building this program up alongside Coach, he's in his fourth year, you're in your third year. I mean, what's that been like to, you know, kind of have, you know, pretty much very significant improvement year to year, right?
I mean, it's been awesome. You know, from my first June sitting in Coach's office right as he came in, you know, he told me this is where we're going to be, this is what we're building towards. And I think we've, you know, exceeded at every stage. I think we just have a group of guys who are really willing to commit themselves fully to this program. We have such a great group of alumni as well. You know, every day, you know, we have guys who graduated last year, guys who graduated 20 years ago. I think all of them are looking forward to this program, continuing to build and continuing to succeed.
Yeah, Dan, what's kind of the next step, you know, moving forward next year, you know, in your mind, kind of like what this program needs to do to take it even the next level, right? You know, Final 16 this year, trying to take it further, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think having this kind of experience is really important. You know, it's hard to replicate it until you've been on this stage. You know, we're going to keep working the same process we have been, which is, you know, getting better every day and continuing to push and elevate our standards. You know, I think this group, this 2026 team, certainly elevated the standards for this program, and it's going to be the challenge of the 2027 team to elevate those standards even more.
What's your message to the seniors right now?
I love them. I love you guys. Just so proud and so thankful for everything that they've given, all the sacrifices, all the early mornings, all the long bus rides, all the work when no one's watching. You know, they've changed the course of this program. You know, they've stuck through, you know, some really hard times, some really hard years, and, you know, we wouldn't be here without them. So I am eternally grateful for, you know, everything they've done and all that they've given to Bates Lacrosse.
Any other thoughts either you want to share on the season, anything else you want to mention, you know, kind of looking back on as a whole we have not talked about?
I mean, just really happy. I mean, tonight's obviously a really tough pill to swallow. you know, but nothing's ever going to go exactly how we plan things. And I think throughout the year, you know, we showed our motto. We showed that we were all in, and we were willing to commit ourselves to success. And, you know, obviously a lot of room for improvement looking forward, but just really thankful for everyone.
This past week also featured our annual Catsby Awards show and Friends of Bates Athletics Challenge, which raised more than $900,000. That's a record. Up next on the docket, the track and field teams are headed to MIT for one last chance for athletes to qualify for nationals. And, of course, the rowing teams are preparing for their respective trips to NCAAs and IRAs at the end of the month. Find out all the latest happenings in Bates Athletics by going to GoBatesBobcats.com. And we'll catch you next time on the Bates Bobcast. We'll be right back.